One or two of you, over the last couple of months, have expressed deep concern about the state of my Bible, and I want you to know I'm really touched by the fact you've even noticed that it is a Bible, and I just want you to know, please don't go off and buy me another one because I love this Bible. It's a little bit battered and frayed around the edges, and it's falling to pieces, which reminds me of what I'm really like and how much I need his grace. The only problem that I have with this Bible is that with the passing of time, the print seems to be getting smaller and smaller. It's a real pain, and I just don't understand why the Lord would... But I've realized that really what he wants me to do is just to lean in a little bit more so I can see what he's trying to say. And I can't remember whether it was J. John or something like that said that if your Bible's falling to pieces, then you probably won't be. So, and I've got plenty more Bibles upstairs as well on the shelves, so don't panic. But if you're new here, and I know there are a number of you who are here for the first time, or you haven't been for a little while, it's just so lovely to see. We're in this series at the start of a new year, and the start of a new decade as well, called Burning Bridges. And I want to talk a little bit about choices and about comparing today. And so I thought I'd like to start with a little bit of fun, if at all possible. It's because, I mean, if you go to the supermarket, did anyone here not go to the supermarket? Colin. Do you know, I don't know about you, but if I ever go to the supermarket, I'm overwhelmed by the choices. It's just so overwhelming. I've spent quite a lot of time in different continents where there's no choice at all. You're just grateful for anything that's on the shelf, frankly. But you go in this country, it is overwhelming, okay, with the choices that we're confronted with. So, and so we have to compare when we're making our decisions. And so I've sort of put together a few items, and I just wondered if we were going to compare how we would go about making our choices here, you know, and what we would choose, basically, in this comparison game that we're going to play. So here's the first one. It's one of my favorites. Can we get the next slide up? Would you choose Kettle's salt and vinegar crisps, okay, or Sainsbury's basics? I mean, hands up for Kettle's salt and vinegar, okay? The supermarket local brand, hands up. Yeah, I'm not surprised, you know, just cheapskates you lot, you know. It's Kettle's wins hands down every time, okay? How about if we're buying toothpaste, okay? And let's, you know, when we have a choice of toothpaste, would we go for Crest? And you can see that they're advertising cavity protection there, or Colgate that give you extra strong teeth with cavity protection as well. So hands up for Crest. Just John. Now, if your choice is not, this is the only choice you've got. You can't say I'm going for Hammer and Tong or whatever it is, you know, or for Aquafresh. You know, it's hands up for Colgate. There we are. Colgate wins it. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that incredible? I knew you'd go there. Okay, how about this one? This is a water one, okay? San Pellegrino, sparkling water, fresh from the hills of Italia or wherever, or Tesco specials. Hands up for San Pellegrino. Who's going to go for San Pellegrino? Who's going to go for the tap water from Tesco? Ah, wow, you don't like bubbles. I bet you lot don't like champagne either, do you? No, or Prosecco. Actually, we're a Prosecco church, not champagne. All right, I was surprised at that. I would always go for San Pellegrino, even though it's a little bit expensive. How about rubbish bags, okay? Okay, rubbish bags. They're not very exciting, if we're being really honest. But if you had a choice, would you go for a normal one here, or would you go for an odor-free rubbish bag? Hands up for the odor-free rubbish bags. Oh, gosh, your houses must stink. How about just the normal black bags? Oh, bless you. Oh, well, all right. A slightly more defining one is this next one, loo roll. All right, are you going to go for the soft test luxury 2-ply loo roll or the single ply? Hands up for the luxury loo roll. Yeah, we like our comforts, don't we? Hands up for the single ply. Just one hand. The thing about single ply is you have to wrap it over three times, don't you? So it just costs three times as much. Too much detail. Okay, sorry. How about the final, the real, real biggie here, okay? This is the really big one, okay? This is the final one for me, okay? Are you going to go for Pepsi or Coca-Cola? I mean, hands up for Pepsi. Hands up for Coca-Cola. Coke has it every time. I actually really don't understand how Pepsi even managed to remain in business, if I'm being really honest. But anyway, there we are. Now, the thing is, when we go to the supermarket and we compare products, that there are so many different factors that come into play when we're making a choice, when we're comparing these different products. Sometimes it's like, is this better because it's a whitening toothpaste? Or is it better for cavities? I'm now thinking of cats and McCavity now, and I know my mind shouldn't have gone there, but that song, but don't worry. Or are you thinking about the price when you buy your toothpaste? It's just normal when we go to the shops that we compare what we're looking at. When you buy a car, you're looking at whether it's environmentally friendly, if you have a big family, whether it can cope with the family, if you have a dog where you can put a dog in the back, how many miles to gallon you get, you're comparing. If you go and buy a set of golf clubs, you're going to want to try them out first, aren't you? You're going to see which one, the golfers are on the front row here and around, which one's best for you, which one's best for your grip, which one helps you to hit the ball further. We are trained in so many different aspects of our lives just to compare when we make choices. It is the natural thing to do. The problem is when we start doing it with people. Because we have to understand that our souls weren't designed to compare. When we go through Scripture, it is really quite extraordinary how many different stories there are of people who compare themselves to other people. It is incredible, actually. Right at the very beginning of the Bible, in the very first sort of family, we have Cain and Abel, and Cain's comparing himself with Abel, and he looks at Abel, and he doesn't understand why Abel seems to have all of God's blessing. He doesn't understand why his brother's sacrifice is accepted and his isn't accepted. And some of us, we will understand, we'll get that kind of comparison, if we're being honest. We know what it is to look around and say to ourselves, why is it that some people just appear to be so blessed and we're not? It looks like God is all over that person there. God's shown them the person they were meant to marry so easily, and everything's just fallen into their lap so easily along the way. They've just breezed through school. They had a great time at university. They've just gone from one job to another, from success to another, and God seems to bless that person's life, but I'm struggling here. And we compare our lives to others in that sort of way. We read through the Bible. We come across a character by the name of Jacob, and he is unbelievably envious of his brother Esau. And the reason he's envious of Esau is that Esau seems to be favored by his father. And it's this incredible story. It's this crazy story, actually, where he spends his entire life trying to become like his brother, trying to become like Esau, okay? Why? So that he can get his father's acceptance. And some of us understand that kind of comparison, okay? We've spent our whole lives sort of comparing ourselves with a sibling, with a brother, a sister, or whatever. And for some reason, we believe that our parents have accepted them, but they haven't accepted us. And I'm not going to ask you to stick your hands up if that's true, but it's true of so many of us in this room. I've been around long enough to know that it's true of a huge proportion of people in this place. And sometimes it's not even a sibling thing, if I'm being honest, okay? This desire to have our parents approve of us can lead to all kinds of unhealthy decisions in our lives, okay? We just don't understand sometimes why our parents don't understand us or don't accept us. I know what it's like, really know what it's like, to wonder whether, my parents were my parents, but sometimes I felt like I belonged to the milkman. I felt so different to my, anyone else have that experience? Just feel so, it's just like, like the grades that we had were never good enough for our parents, or the jobs that we got were never good enough for our parents, or the people we dated just weren't good enough for our parents, and we've just sort of got frustrated along the way. And you keep reading through the Bible, and you come to another story, and there's a character by the name of Joseph. And God gives Joseph this dream for his life, and it's a pretty amazing dream, frankly. It's a very cool dream. Okay, and he probably makes the mistake of telling his brothers about it. Really, you know, that's where it all went horribly wrong. But it says this, the Bible says that his brothers started to compare their lives with his life, or the dream they didn't have with the dream that he had, and they became envious, and they end up beating him up and throwing him into a pit and selling him into slavery. And some of us feel like that, actually. We look around at life and we're saying, you know, I don't get it. You know, why does everyone else appear to have a God-given dream or vision or purpose for their life, you know? And they're out changing the world, and I'm stuck in a cubicle stapling pieces of paper together, day in, day out. And we sort of find ourselves saying, why doesn't God give me a dream for my life where there's real impact? Keep reading through the Bible. I'm not going through the entire Bible, don't panic. But you get to a girl by the name of Leah, because we've just had chaps so far. We get to Leah. And Leah is envious of a girl called Rachel, and the Bible actually says that Rachel was very, very beautiful. So Leah wanted to be like Rachel. And I know that some of us know about that kind of comparison. You know, we've spent our whole lives thinking that we're not pretty enough, or I wish that my body was like their body, or why can't I be tall, dark, and handsome like whoever, and we just live with this constant feeling that we are not enough. And what's really interesting, as I've been thinking about this, is that every single story in Scripture where one person is comparing themselves with another person, every single time it takes place within community. Between two people who actually know each other, often incredibly well. They spend time together. And this is one of the dangerous things about envy and comparison. It breeds in proximity. It is deadly to communities. It is deadly to families. And I genuinely know how deadly it can be in church life as well. You see, we're never going to compare ourselves. We're never going to compare our house to the mansion on the other side of town. What we do is we compare our garden with our neighbor's garden, or we compare our house with the other houses in our street. Actually, I've got neighbors here who live next to each other, apparently, so I'm going to picture you looking over each other's fence now, but it's what we can do. It is the sin of comparison. And it breeds in proximity, and it can be incredibly dangerous. You know, we want to have the best, to be the best in our little community, in our little street, in our family, in our circle. And we are actually taught to do this from a very, very early stage. For some of us, it was our parents, actually. Our parents compared us with our siblings or our cousins or our friends. Some of us had teachers who compared us with other pupils. Some of us had sports coaches who compared us with other coaches. And then, if that weren't enough, there's stats. There's stats in schools. And then you get to work and there are performance evaluations. And if you don't go down that route, you have beauty contests or bodybuilding contests or whatever. And everything in our, or just magazines actually, everything in our culture leads to inevitable comparison, which leads to inevitable destruction. And guess what? It's not a stuff issue. It's not a stuff issue. Some of us, we just think it's a stuff issue. So if I could have a little bit of more of this or a little bit more of that, you know, I just a little bit more of this stuff. If I lived in that house, then I wouldn't have that problem. Or if I drove that Porsche convertible, then I wouldn't have a problem with life ever again. We think it's a stuff issue. It's not a stuff issue. Some of us, we can tend to think that it's a people issue. We think it's a category of people. So we blame all the skinny people. If skinny people didn't exist on the face of this planet, then I would be more content. Or it's the rich people. If rich people didn't exist on the face of this planet, then I wouldn't have a comparison problem and I would be absolutely fine. Listen, it is not a stuff issue. It's not a people issue. Ultimately, it is an insecurity issue that goes deep into our souls. And so it doesn't matter what we get or what we have. Some of us have convinced ourselves if only we'd married that other person, or only we'd just hit that level, made that grade, or got that job, then I would be fine. And we only really only think these things because we don't understand the depths of our brokenness as human beings. We have brokenness. Comparison is not a stuff issue. Comparison is not a people issue. It is a spiritual issue. Envy is a spiritual issue. So I want to try and understand it sort of by looking at a couple of different passages and just making a few suggestions. But if you go right back to the beginning, go back to the early chapters, the early books of the Bible. In Exodus 20, God encourages his people not to covet, whether it's someone else's donkey, family, spouse, house, slave, you know, whatever. At the very beginning, God lays out these guidelines for how we are to love him and how we are to love one another. And he's basically saying that this idea of comparison is deadly. Because God understood that there would be this tendency for all of us to look over our shoulders. Why? To see who's got the corner office as they've been promoted. Or to see who's got the new outfit in the sales. Or to see who's got the new iPad or the new iPhone or the new iMac or the new anything that begins with I, frankly. He's just addressing it. So in the New Testament, Paul writes this in 2 Corinthians 10. He says this, okay. When they measure themselves with themselves and compare themselves with one another, so that's, you know, that's what's going to happen. They are without understanding and behave unwisely. So as we think about going to this new year, as we think about going to this new decade, and we think about living lives of wisdom, which I think we would all quite like to do. Right from the beginning, the Bible was telling us that if we want to live a life of wisdom, you know, comparing aspects of what we do or comparing aspects of what we have with other people has to stop. That has to go. It can't be part of our life again. Because as soon as we start comparing ourselves with other people, we're going to live lives that lack wisdom. So what does this look like? Well, and let me just say this before I get into real practicalities, okay? I think there is a direct connection between our lack of joy and gratitude and our compulsion to compare. So one of the easiest ways to define in our lives if this comparison thing is a little bit out of control in our lives is to look at our levels of joy and gratitude. As soon as we recognize that we're not living lives with joy or gratitude in them, that ought to be like a little bit of a red flag that goes up in our lives as a warning sign, okay? Because maybe we're just spending too much time comparing ourselves with other people. You know, it has been said by many people that comparison is the thief of happiness. I had lunch with somebody yesterday in Oxford, and I was talking to them about what I was going to be saying today, and they said, it's also the thief of peace. I agree with him. Comparison is the thief of happiness and peace. And deep, deep down, I suspect we all know that, if we're being honest. I have seen it in my own life. I can go in a moment from being so unbelievably grateful and full of joy for life and all that God has given me, for everything that I have, for family and friends, for circumstances. And then I can compare myself in a split second and lose joy and gratitude. Anyone else ever been there? Yeah. It's what we do. Thank you. And it is a deadly game, okay? Because comparison always leads us to either conforming or competing. It either leads to false pride or false inferiority. And the danger of comparison is that no matter what you do with it, eventually there is always someone who's prettier than you. Or there's always someone who's smarter than you. Or there's always someone who can do more sit-ups than you can do, which is really irritating for me. There's always someone who's more popular than you are, or there's always someone who is a better leader, or there's always someone who's, there's always someone who's younger than you. There's always someone who's a better speaker out there. There's always someone who's more gifted than you are. And so letting go of this comparison thing is a really, really big deal, and no one ever talks about it. But it distorts us massively. So let me give you four things really practically. And I have to say this isn't like a one-stop fix-all type of deal. I wish it was, but it isn't, okay? It's not like you get a brownie badge that you can sit on your arm and say, I've dealt with the comparison thing, okay? It's not that, okay? You know, I've done that, you know, got the badge, it's all sorted. It doesn't work that way. I think my goal today, my hope today, is that we might raise the level of awareness. Just raise the level of awareness, because where comparing and envy is totally and utterly dangerous is when and where we are completely unaware of the devastation that it does to our own souls and to the lives of those that are precious and around us. So here's my first suggestion. Don't use social media as a measurement tool. All right, I know there are one or two of you that are active on social media. I used to be, I'm not so much now, but I watch it a little bit. But I've talked about it before, and I'm going to talk about it again and again, because I think it's a real issue in our culture, and it's not going to go away soon. That's the truth, okay? I jotted this down a little while ago, okay? Social media is to envy what petrol is to fire. I thought it was good. That's why I wrote it down. So I'm going to throw that out there. I like that one. Thank you, Lord. Says he proudly. Oh, Lord, forgive me. You know, if we have a comparing issue, if we have an envy issue, social media is not going to help us at all. Neither is Hello or OK or Men's Health, frankly. All right? I was talking to somebody a little while ago who started using their phone as their alarm to wake them up in the morning. And I said, how did that go? And he said to me, well, he said, I used to lean over, turn off my alarm, and immediately go onto Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And it was like, you know, oh, bless him. You know, he was just setting himself up to fail right from the very moment he woke up at the beginning of the day. You know, and I just imagined myself, if I'd done that, thinking, oh, you know, I open up Instagram, and oh, there's an old friend who's just written a book. I'm so thrilled that they've just written their book, and it's a bestseller. Or, you know, and there's a couple of other friends who've decided to work collaboratively together. And I'm quite sure that if they, you know, that they knew, you know, that they would have liked to work with me, I've convinced myself. But, you know, but actually, you know, they know how busy I am and that our circumstances are different. And so, so I convinced myself. Oh, and there's another friend who's just done a quadruple Ironman in 1 week. And he's going off to do a marathon next week. And it's like, and I'm still there in my pajamas. It's like, oh, you know, I'm such a useless human being. I'm such a failure, and it begins to overwhelm us. And it's like, come on, Mark, you're falling behind here. But am I really falling behind? Aren't we really falling behind? Really? Really? I mean, are my friends intentionally posting those pictures on social media to make me feel like a loser? Yeah, if I'm not careful, it's very easy for our social media streams to remind us of all the things that we're not doing or all the things that we aren't, all the dreams that we're not fulfilling, of all the furniture, the very old furniture that is in our house that needs to be replaced in the very near future, of all the groups that we're no longer included in. And I think it's very easy in our culture to drift into convincing ourselves that the social media highlight reels are reality. It's not. Social media is an awesome networking tool. It's a great way to remain connected to friends or even in the business world. But don't use it as a measurement tool. Don't use it as a measurement tool. Okay? Whatever you do, do not compare your lives, okay, to the social media highlight reel of everyone else's life, you know, because all we're ever going to do is constantly ask ourselves, are we stacking up? Am I stacking up? Okay. And that never ends well. All right. Here's the second thing. Choose admiration over envy. Choose admiration over envy. And honestly, it's only in the last couple of years, because of the journey that I've been on and I've had to reflect on in all sorts of ways, there is a very, very fine line between admiration and envy. Incredibly fine, okay? And actually, it's so fine that at times it can feel like exactly the same emotional response, if I'm being honest. And I think it all just depends on whether or not I'm in a healthy place or not. You know, it's such a fine line. And either way, you know, whether your emotion is either envy or admiration for that person, both of those emotions at the end of the day are pointing us to what we value most. So we need to pay attention to it. So I thought I'd just try and just help a little bit, help myself, you know, help us, okay? But just give some questions. I think these are questions that we could ask ourselves. We don't have to do them all, but we could ask one or two of them, you know. If we're wrestling with this sort of thing in a moment, we could try and figure out what's going on inside of us. So, you know, what's going on in our heart. So, you know, here are some questions I've just sort of put together, okay? As I'm looking at somebody else, what do they have that I wish I had? You know, it's an admiration or envy thing. You know, Andy's hat that I love. You know, do I admire it or do I envy it? You know, it depends on what's going on inside of me, okay? You know, but what do they have that I wish I had? You know, here's the next one. What do I admire about them? You know, again, it's important to walk through this sort of thing. What is it about them? What is it about what they have accomplished that I really admire? Here's another one. What have they done to get to where they are today? I heard this the other day. I found it really helpful, okay? Don't compare your rough draft to someone else's finished product. If you're on social media, that's even worth tweeting, actually. But it's don't compare your rough draft to their finished products. You know, it's really easy when someone is up there somewhere to admire them or to envy them. And it's very easy to not think through how it was they got to where they got to. You know, it's so easy because we live in an instant culture to just assume that it just happened overnight. They wake up one morning and they ended up where they ended up. So I think it's worth asking people the question, you know, what have you done to get to where you've got to today? What have you been through to get to where you've got to today? Okay, it's very easy to forget all the practice that has gone in, all the hard work that's gone in, all the rejection, you know. Unless you win the lottery, it's not going to happen instantaneously, really, okay? You know, there would generally be pain and discomfort and awkwardness that's gone on before. There will be some sort of process that individuals have been caught up in. You know, so we need to know what that process was for them. And then you might want to go through what they've gone through to get to where they got to. You know, we could ask ourselves this question: what qualities are there in them that really inspire me? You know, and again, it's about whether you admire them or envy them. And here's another one: how might my expression of these qualities differ from theirs? You know, sometimes it's just as basic as you know. What really bothers us is that the quality somebody else has, they express them in a way that we don't like. We just, you know, we just would express it in a different way. You know, that's because people are wired differently from one another. So the expression of their quality is going to look different to the way that you might express it, okay? And the more we understand that, the more we might give other people a break. Do you know, one of the best things we could do is to give other people a break in grace and in love. How about this question? What can I learn from my desire to embody these qualities more fully? This is all about us comparing our insides to other people's outsides. Simple as that. It's asking ourselves really tough questions about what's going on inside of us, inside of me. Third thing, allow comparison to become celebration. I'm a really big believer in this, okay? I actually believe the Lord has been speaking to me about us as a community, and that the Lord wants to encourage us in this more and more. I think we are this community, but I think he wants to encourage us more and more in this. You know, I think it's something that in this community, in this region, people could really love about Encounter Church, that our friends and the people around us, their accomplishments become causes for celebration and rejoicing, not bitterness. And as we go into this new decade, as we begin a new year, we should never underestimate the power of words. If there's a quality about someone that you really appreciate, tell them. Tell them. Encourage them. You know, speak words that breathe life into other people. Plant seeds of encouragement every day. It's something that we can all do. You know, I had this picture of being at a wedding. I was praying about this. And people throwing confetti everywhere. And it was a picture of this church throwing, the confetti represented encouragement. Just throwing encouragement around all over the place. And guess what? Encouragement lasts a lot longer than confetti. Plus, it really makes a difference. Confetti can be quite messy, really, at the end of the day, unless it's biodegradable, you know, which is probably what we all have to buy now. But I've discovered this over the years. It's very, very difficult to be envious of someone that you're encouraging. Just as something to your heart. It's a posture. Here's the final one. Get straight with who God has made you, who God has made us to be. In James 3, we read this. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. You know, it's, again, it's, I think it's this idea that where there's comparison, where there's envy, we're going to be living lives that we're not designed to live, basically. And that's the bottom line. And I think that there's a little passage, I think, that's really helpful in this, that in Galatians 4, that I just want to close with. I began my descent a little while ago. I'm coming to land here, okay? But I think there is a solution to much of this, okay? And it's not, again, it's not a checklist solution, okay? But if there is a solution, it lies here in these verses, okay? Galatians 4, where Paul writes, but when the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law, that means just like us, okay? God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law so that he could adopt us as his very own children. And I think it's very easy to miss this, okay, but that little phrase there, buy freedom, is the literally translated redeem. It's this idea that God sends Jesus to redeem. And to redeem means to buy back. You know, it means to take something that has been separated and join it back together again. It's taking something that has been broken, something that's been shattered, and making it whole again. So we have to understand that what Scripture is telling us here is that God sends Jesus to redeem us. And when Jesus comes, it's not just about the forgiveness of sins, although it is about the forgiveness of sins. Of course it is. But it's much more than that. You know, it's not just that when we die, we get to be with God for eternity. It is that. But it's much more than that. This idea of redeem is about right here, right now, in this moment, God is redeeming us. It's this process of him taking the broken parts of our lives and making us whole in a continual way. And he goes on to say this in verse 6, Paul. And because we are his children, God sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, prompting us to call out Abba, Father, which literally means daddy. Now you are no longer a slave, but God's own child. And since you are his child, God has made you his heir. And I think this is amazing. This is really incredible if you think about it, okay? What God is saying is that God is in the process of redeeming us. He's taking the broken parts of our lives, the broken things in our lives, and he's making us whole. And it is a process. And it is an ongoing process. It's an ever-becoming, never-arriving process, okay? It's this process where we are being, you are, I am, we are being redeemed. And on top of that, he says, what I want you to remember, really want you to remember, is that God, who is the creator of the universe, which I think is pretty awesome, by the way, okay, he has, which can I just go off on a side, when we're worshipping, it's never a waste of time. We're not waiting for the talk or the notices. You know, what is a waste of time is when we're worshipping, is not worshipping the creator of the universe. That is a waste of time, not to worship him. You know, we are worshiping the creator of the universe. It's incredible. And he has adopted you and me. And he wants us to look to him as our father. Being a dad has been, is one of the greatest challenges and one of the greatest privileges of our life. From that moment you hold them in your hands, it's pretty overwhelming. It is absolutely overwhelming. I don't, you know, it's a privilege, and I know not all of us have had that privilege. But if you've had that privilege, I don't know about you, I just felt completely over my head. You know, I thought, oh my goodness me. You know, oh, this is scary. This is really scary. And the truth is that over the years, as we've watched our children grow, James, Simon, Hannah grow up and get married and now have their own children, some of them, you know, the only thing I've ever wanted for my children is for them to see themselves the way that I see them and that we see them. Because actually, over the years, we've seen things in them that they couldn't see in themselves. It's just life, okay? You know, and they've had their ups and downs. Some of you know them, actually. They've been on the journey of growth, just like we all have. Anyone here not had ups and downs and challenges and complexities in life? You know, it's the same for them. It's the same for us. We are all there, okay? But you know, we've watched them grow up and we've watched them go on this journey and try to make decisions and figure out who it is that they are. But more than anything else, I just wanted them to see them the way that we saw them, Karen and I saw them, okay? And to know about the unbelievable potential that existed and still exists within them. And what this passage is simply saying is that God, more than anything else, he wants us to see ourselves the way that he sees us. That's what he wants. And that is where ultimately our worth and our value comes from. God knows that we have hearts that long to be at peace. And if we're looking to the left and we're looking to the right, we're looking to other people, you know, he knows where that leads. He knows that comparison and envy will only lead to destruction. Which is why God says to us, hey, look at me. Look at me. When we're worshiping, when we're celebrating, when we're together, we're realigning our hearts and the eyes of our hearts with him, and we're looking at him, and he's saying, you know, look at me, because when you look at me, that's where you will determine, that's where you will experience, that's where you will understand your value and your worth. But the moment we start looking somewhere else, it's the moment we get distorted and our lives begin to fall to pieces. So I just want to encourage you in that.